Dr. David Shulkin inherited a Veterans Affairs department only partway through a major transformation. As secretary, he's got a lot of tough constituents, Congress, a demanding president, veterans groups, and veterans themselves. In an interview with Federal Drive host Tom Temin, Shulkin discussed a number of pressing matters, starting with the consequences of new funding for the Veterans Choice Program just approved by Congress. It extends veterans' ability to obtain health care outside of the VA system. But Shulkin says, don't call it privatization.
One of the things that we know is that it's so important to be able to allow our veterans to get care in VA, but also when VA is not able to provide the services, to be able to go out into the community. And that means that we need to continue to support our choice funding. We're looking for Congress to help us extend our current choice funding to make sure that we can continue the services for our veterans.
It seems to me, though, that also choice would have an effect on real estate, because one of the issues with VA's real estate is that it's not quite, the capacity is not where you need it to be because of migrations of veterans' populations. And hospitals are not like other types of offices where you can just lease more space or get rid of space. Hospitals tend to have specialized requirements. So do you think long-term choice can help alleviate the real estate question?
Well, I think overall, what we're trying to do is to modernize the VA system and to make sure that the facilities that we have are world-class facilities. And the way that you do that is by looking at each market and determining whether the current facilities that you have are meeting the needs or whether you need to invest in more facilities. When you invest in more facilities, we are looking at different ways of doing that. We're looking at working closer with private sector partners that we have. We're looking at doing private sector partnerships to build new facilities. This is not business as usual in the VA, and we think that a modern healthcare system is going to need different approaches to be able to get us there.
And one of those approaches, then, I guess, will be a way to scale or descale the sheer space of healthcare facilities that you have in a given spot.
I think that's right. Yes, I think that's right. We've announced that we want to essentially dispose of our vacant and underutilized facilities, which are over 1,100 across the country. And at the same time, there are areas that we need to open up new facilities. Part of the choice funding that we're working with right now to extend with Congress is seeking approval for 28 new leases that have been held up under congressional approval. And Congress understands that it's critical to get those leases opened, because there are many parts of the country where our veteran population is growing rapidly, and we don't have adequate facilities now to care for all those new veterans.
And it sounds like you want to avoid building too many new monuments.
Well, we really do want to avoid building large new construction projects where they're not necessary. There are parts of the country where we have recently been able to do that. Our New Orleans facility, for example, which was a replacement hospital for the hospital that was destroyed in Katrina, opened up earlier this year. And of course, that was needed for the veterans in Louisiana. But the days of building large new hospitals, I think as healthcare has changed to become more ambulatory and people are getting more care using technology and at home, we're trying to build a modern system, not replicating an old system.
I think the idea that the hospital opened just recently because of one destroyed in Katrina probably says it all. In a way, that was 15 years ago, and so you probably need a little bit more agility than that.
Well, I think that's right, and that's why we're looking at ways to open up facilities faster and cheaper, and working with the private sector in these private-public partnerships and partnering with the Department of Defense and academic centers. And so we're looking at doing business differently than it's been done in the past.
We're speaking with VA Secretary Dr. David Shulkin. And a lot of the unions and other groups have commented on choice programs, saying that it amounts to privatizing VA. No one has really put forth, that I've heard, an actual proposal to privatize VA. But what's your take on whether we're privatizing or simply depending more on the private sector to do the same thing?
Well, I don't think the facts support that anybody in the VA, or certainly not the president, are supportive of privatization. When you take a look at the president's budget and the increases that were put forth to serve veterans, the vast majority of the money, two-thirds of the money, is going to improve services within the VA, to strengthen the VA. There are additional funds to allow veterans to have greater choice and to go out into the community, but it's certainly not the majority of the money. And so what we're really seeing is the concept and the vision of building a system that works for veterans, where they can take advantage of those services within VA that are best in class, and that where they need to, they can also take advantage of services in the community to get the best care available. Because our goal is that veterans should be able to access the very best that this country has to offer. And we think that's a strong VA system partnering with the community providers.
And the many commissions and panels and oversight bodies that have examined VA and issued multi-hundred page reports over the last few years, among the conclusions in some cases has been a bifurcation, if you will, so that the really veterans and war injury specific care needs would be taken care of directly by VA, and everything else, the routine health care problems that everyone has in common, veterans or not, would be taken care of presumably less expensively outside of VA. Do you envision that's how choice would ultimately look?
No. And I don't think that that's been the conclusion of the commissions and the reports. I think that there is no doubt that there are centers of excellence that focus on the service needs of veterans that need to be world class, and that we need to double down on and make sure that we are doing the very best that we can. But the view of VA healthcare needs to be a comprehensive, integrated approach to care. This is one of the reasons why we believe strongly in strong primary care and a strong integration with behavioral healthcare services, so that VA does not become just a specialized center of excellence approach, but it provides comprehensive care. I think that can be supplemented for very specific services with the community, so that, an example would be maternity services, where we're seeing a growth in women that are pregnant. VA is not going to develop maternity floors and neonatal intensive care units. We're going to work with the private sector on that. But in terms of a overall integrated approach to care, this needs to be strong primary care and behavioral health within the VA system as well.
So that means something even as long-lasting as, say, post-traumatic stress disorder, which can last well beyond the service life of a veteran into the veteran's life, that could be care could be provided in either a VA facility or private sector, whichever is more suited in that circumstance?
No, I think when it comes to post-traumatic stress and behavioral health care services, when you look at the reality of the situation, no system in the country provides as comprehensive a set of services as the VA. And for the most part, those services are difficult to access in the private sector. So that we are committed to building a comprehensive set of behavioral services across the country for our veterans. There probably will be some areas where we do work with the private sector in behavioral health services and PTS, but that is our general approach, is to build a comprehensive set of services for our veterans.
Got it. And so it strikes me that in this, let's call it a hybrid model, that will be pretty much the way VA is going to look from now on, that requires a certain amount of oversight and managerial capability that maybe VA doesn't have in its DNA when it provided everything within its own walls to veterans. Do you feel that the managerial depth is there to be able to handle a hybrid environment such that the taxpayer and the veterans both get what they bargain for?
I do. Our veteran integrated networks are really transitioning to be managers of a region which will integrate care in the VA and care in the community. And we are working not only within our own ranks in VA, but we're working with outside organizations to help us supplement the ability to have veterans be able to make the choice between whether they get their care in the VA or outside the VA. These are groups and companies that work in areas like this. And so we've been working with third-party administrators and other organizations to make sure that we're building that type of seamless system for our veterans.
And I want to move on to the issue of the EHR, the electronic health record, and the switch to Cerner. First of all, it looked like you as secretary made a sole source selection decision. Tell us the decision process in your head that led to that decision in the first place.
Well, one of the things I have committed as secretary is to make sure that the VA is making the decisions that it needs to make to move the system forward and to address issues that have been lingering for decades. And one of those issues that has been lingering for decades has been whether we're going to be able to work closer with the Department of Defense, because we know where all of our customers in the future are going to come from. They come from the Department of Defense. And as people know, we have one system and the Department of Defense has another system. And so for at least 17 years that I can trace back, we've had commissions and Congress call multiple times for us to work closer together. And it just made sense to me that if we're going to finally address the issues that are needed for our veterans, that we've got to be on the same system as the Department of Defense. And so when I looked at the specific needs that were required and what needs to happen, the very best decision, I think, for the taxpayer and for Veterans Health was to make a determination of findings that it was in our veterans' interest to move expeditiously onto a single system. And so that's the decision I made.
Now, the Cerner system really hasn't been proven yet in DOD. It's running, I think, in one place in the Pacific Northwest at this point. Are you confident that it's going to work for DOD before VA moves over to it?
I am confident. In the private sector, I've overseen the installation of several electronic medical records, and this is never an easy process. It's often a lengthy process, and it will be for the Department of Defense, but we are working very closely with our colleagues there who feel confident that they are proceeding along a path that it appears to be working and successful. They're learning along the way. Part of the reason why we're working so closely with them now is so that we don't have to relearn all those same lessons and implementation issues on the system. We can actually be doing this with the Department of Defense and shortcutting some of the issues that they've addressed, and this will help us implement this cheaper and faster.
Now, what happens to Vista? Because you have about 10,000, I think, at least people that work on Vista. Some of them have spent their careers on the Vista program. So first of all, what about the people that you have and that human capital and sunk investment in all of the Vista modules? And they go beyond electronic health records. They really go to the heart of the logistics in many cases of the VA itself.
Well, the transition from Vista to the Cerner system, as I said, is going to be quite a lengthy process, and we have to make sure that we do not lose the valuable and essential information and capabilities that we have in Vista, so that we're going to need every one of those professionals to be engaged and to be part of this transformation process. So we're not looking at anybody losing their jobs in this. What we're looking for is to have them be part of what will be one of the largest transformations of electronic medical records and help us make sure that we get this right and that the end result is a much better, more efficient system that can work closely with the Department of Defense. And that's very consistent with our mission. And so I think that the professionals that are working on Vista will feel very professionally satisfied to be part of such a big transformation.
I mean, neither one of us are programmers, but there are specific technological underpinnings in Vista that make it a very good distributed system for this type of record. And I think it was developed at Mass General Hospital, actually, originally, way back when. And so do you feel that the Cerner technology and the people that are peddling it can understand what it was that made Vista so powerful and somehow get you those capabilities in their system?
Well, I think that the transition of electronic medical records is really a change management process. And so it's going to be much more incumbent upon the VA and the people who work in the VA and our clinicians to make sure that that transition over to the Cerner project doesn't lose what we've built and what we are very proud of that we've been able to do under our VISTA system. What we're doing is we're essentially trying to maintain the clinical innovations and the work products that have led to really good outcomes in the VA for veterans, maintain that, but get out of being in the software business and get out of being in the maintenance of systems like VISTA and really turn that over to a commercial company that will be able to maintain and update our systems. But we're not looking to essentially dumb down our systems. We're looking to maintain and to build upon the clinical informatics innovations that VA is so proud of.
We're speaking with Dr. David Chulkin. He's the Secretary of Veterans Affairs. And to make this transfer over time, my prediction, it's going to take you 10 years. But can you do this between VA staff, defense staff, and Cerner, or will you need multi-billion dollar contracts with one of the consulting firms?
Well, that's one of the issues that we're working through right now. We've given ourselves approximately a four-month time frame to come to contract terms and to determine the need for integrators who would be assisting us in the change management process. But I haven't made a decision whether that's necessary or not, or whether we can do this more directly between the companies that are directly involved in electronic medical records, VA, and the Department of Defense.
And let's switch over to some of the employee management reforms that have happened at VA for a variety of reasons with Congress over the past couple of years. And do you feel now that the system that has been imposed or that you've sought or that we have is sufficient for managing VA in the way that Congress expects, and I guess you expect, and what people in the public, based on what they've heard in news reports, also expect?
Well, I think we've taken some important steps forward, and we're setting a new standard for what it takes to have the privilege of being able to serve our veterans and to work in the VA. I don't think that we've addressed all of the issues that are required to make sure that we have the right workforce in place. Quite frankly, the accountability bill has helped us be able to improve the process so that when somebody should no longer be working in the VA, that we can do that more expeditiously, and it still allows due process so it's fair to the employee, but it begins to start making the system work better. But what we haven't done is we haven't streamlined the hiring process, and it still is far too difficult and too long to bring new employees into the VA. So we're continuing to work with Congress to make sure that we can change the workforce regulations to be able to balance out the need of bringing on the right people at the same time removing those who have lost the privilege of being able to work in the VA so that we can get the very right complement of people in serving our veterans.
What about the idea of moving certain executives from Title V to Title 38? Is that still active as a part of the consideration, or do you not need that?
Well, I do think that is one of the proposed ways to get us to where we need to go. Title 38 recognizes that those who work in the healthcare part of the organization need to have some additional flexibilities to be able to do their job and to be able to get them on board quicker. And I think Title 38 has been an important tool for VA. And so looking at expanding that to additional groups of healthcare professionals is one of the ways to get there, but it certainly is not the only way to get there.
Now, you've been secretary for about 6 months now. Do you still like it?
Oh, it's a terrific privilege and honor every day to be able to represent the 21 million Americans who have put their lives on the line for the country. And I wake up every day feeling that we just have such a potential for doing more, and so I'm excited about the opportunity and believe that every day we're getting a stronger VA.
And early on, some of the reports noted that you were able to find the time to see a patient once in a while. Do you still get that time?
I do. I was seeing patients not too long ago up in the Manhattan VA, and I also have the opportunity to see patients from my office here in Washington using our telehealth system. I see patients in Grants Pass, Oregon. So it's a nice way of being able to leverage my time when I can't get out of the office using telehealth, and when I can get in person up to the Manhattan VA, which is where my privileges are, I get to see veterans in person, which is always a great way for me to connect and to see actually how we're delivering our services.
And a final question on the Washington, D.C. VA Medical Center, which had some pretty serious problems a few months ago from the as revealed by the Inspector General. How's progress on that particular one?
I think things are much better at the Washington, D.C. VA. Our biggest concern was in getting our inventory management system in place. We now have that working fairly well. We have new leadership in place at the Washington, D.C. VA, and of course, everything starts with having the right leaders in place, and I believe that the staff and the veterans are feeling that the management is listening to them and addressing issues. As so many times we learn in the VA, when problems have been ignored or not dealt with for a long time, you don't get immediate solutions. Sometimes it takes a while to get to where you want to go. What I think is important is that you're seeing the progress and you have a path laid out to getting to a place where you know that these are the right services being provided for veterans. So when a couple weeks ago, when we looked at our prosthetics and orthotics area in Washington, the wait times were too long, and now we're focused on that and getting those wait times down. I think it will probably still be a few more months before we have all the staff on board, and we can really be proud that we're offering timely, really good quality services. But I know that we're getting there and moving in the right direction.
It's Dr. David Shulkin, the Secretary of Veterans Affairs, interviewed there by Federal Drive host Tom Temin. You can find both parts at federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive.